Good to have each one of you with us this morning, those who are visiting in particular. And we appreciate you taking the time and coming and studying with us. I noticed our numbers are down a little, and I would simply attribute that to the fact that I had announced last Sunday morning that today's lesson was going to center around communication within marriage and that the men should wear their hard-toed shoes. So perhaps a number of the men have found other places to be this morning, but they can still, women, remember this, they can still listen to it online when it gets posted. We have been talking about the idea of blueprints, and in particular, in relation to the writing of the Hebrew writer, he talked about when Moses was on the mount and going to build the tabernacle, see that you make all things according to the pattern shown you on the mountain. And I believe that that particular expression is something that goes through a number of areas in our lives, including the idea of the work of the church and how we carry out that work, but also in various aspects of our lives in general. And we're making application this morning to the idea of marriage. And when we talk about marriage, we're really talking about what I'm using as an expression, a God-joined union. And I get that from the fact that there are a number of times the idea of marriage is used in a non-biblical sense, that is to say, in a non-God-joined union sense. And I've made this comment to you, I think even in scriptures, the word marriage was used, that word was used accommodatively and not really an expression of a God-joined union. As we note on the screen behind me, there are types of marriages in almost every society. There are some exceptions that will not tolerate some of these things, but a man and a woman, the idea of people of the same gender, or the idea that men have a number of wives or women would have a number of husbands, though that's usually a very rare exception. Also, the idea of adulterous relationships that are called marriage are in fact adulterous relationships. And then God used the term in a spiritual sense, especially when he talked to Israel and Judah, and it was almost always connected with spiritual adultery on their part. But taking Matthew, the 19th chapter, when Jesus is in a conversation with the scribes and Pharisees, and they're trying to pin him down about the idea of divorce and then being able to marry again, Jesus makes the point of that which is a union that is joined by God. And from that particular phrase, I take the comment, a God-joined union. And I think that it helps me at least understand when I'm talking to people and they start describing all kinds of scenarios in marriage or their marriage or a friend's marriage or a relative's marriage, all I want to do is ask, is it a God-joined union? I don't care that they got a marriage certificate someplace. I want to know if it's a God-joined union. And of course, over the last couple of weeks, we've talked about those things that are involved in this God-joined union. One is the idea of the gender. And as we looked in Genesis, it's a man and a woman. We also talked about the permanence of it. And we also talked about the idea of it being something that is a commitment and noted the difference between a commitment and a permanency. While they may sound like they're the same, they do interact with one another, but the necessity or the importance of them being linked together. We expressed that in our study last week. And so this morning, we're going to talk about the idea of communication and the value of communication within the scriptures. We're going to look at a few scriptures, and we also want to just make this point. There are a lot of scriptures that we use in a general sense about our relationship with people in a congregation, our relationship with people at work, and sometimes we forget to keep it within the relationship of a husband and wife in a family relationship. Sometimes we forget that it includes things that are important for siblings in their relationship or parents with their children when we talk about the idea of communication. There are a number of different definitions that are given for the idea of communication, but I'm simply talking about the ability to express verbally and non-verbally an idea, a thought, whatever, to someone else, and them understanding and receiving that which you're communicating. Well, we'll talk primarily about verbal communication this morning. We want to understand that there's also very strong nonverbal communication that can take place between people. And therefore, especially this morning, we'll be looking at it with regard to between a husband and a wife. As we talk about this idea of communication, we want to begin by noting the fact that it's important for us to recognize certain passages that on the surface may not say communication, but I think as a whole, that idea is going to be expressed. One of those passages is in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter and verse 7. Having already been told, that is the wives, that they are to give honor to their husbands, as Sarah called her husband Lord, the husband is reminded, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. Well, this morning we're going to take that verse and make application specifically to the idea of communicating with one another. And I use the one with the husband here because, as I said last Sunday, and I truly believe that most of the time, communication problems can arise primarily among we men in our inabilities at times to effectively communicate with our wives. But I do promise you men that I will say things this morning that will be relevant to shortcomings of women in regard to communication as well. So don't think all is lost in this morning's lesson for everyone. We're told to dwell with them according to knowledge. God has given us the responsibility, gentlemen, of knowing our wives. In all the things we've talked about and in all the things we'll talk about in future lessons, we cannot downplay the value, the importance in the eyes of God of getting to be aware of who our wife is. As I've said in sermons past on marriage and will always say it at some point in a series, it's not good enough, no matter how funny it may sound, as men have said it on TV programs, on the radio or wherever, when they simply say, women, who can understand them? Your wife, who can understand her? I'll tell you what God says, you'd better understand her. That's a God-given command that I have a responsibility to dwell with my wife according to knowledge. And I don't get to say, well, I'll never figure her out. She's not here to refute this, and she wouldn't anyhow. I've got my wife figured out. Pretty much so. But you know something? That should be true. And that's not a bragging on my part. That should be true of all the men here who have been married for any length of time. I realize there's a learning curve, but it's not some long-term learning curve. There are many aspects of your wife that you'll come to know and be aware of within just a few years. And then from there on, it's simply having a deeper and deeper understanding of her and how you as a husband can be the husband God wants you to be with her. So be sure that you didn't simply dismiss the humorous comment made in the world, well, you just can't understand women. If you take that attitude, then know this, gentlemen, you are sinning. And I would say that inferred within this, though not stated, is that women have a responsibility to know their husbands and understand their husbands. And in most cases, people will say that's fairly easy to do. And I'm not going to disagree with that, and I'm not going to make it some type of humorous comment. We tend to show ourselves who we are a little easier. We don't have as many layers of who we are as the women do. And I want to also simply say this. Those layers are part of what make women so beautiful in all aspects. So we have a responsibility to know them, to understand them, and to do that which will help us dwell with them according to knowledge. Now, just as a quick aside, he talks about the idea of giving honor as a weaker vessel, and we've talked about this before. There's no insult intended here by the Holy Spirit with regard to the female sex. It is not an insult in the eyes of God to say that women are made up of a different type of personality by and large that we as men are. Women are by and large, there are set exceptions on all of this, but women are by and large physically weaker than their spouse. And that doesn't in any way, and there's nothing in this verse that suggests a question of superiority or inferiority. So this is not about men thinking they're superior to their wives. It's not about women feeling that they're inferior to their husbands. That's not the point of the passage here. But as I said, we're talking this morning about the whole idea of communication and the need to have effective communication with our spouses. Another passage I want to look at rather quickly is Colossians, the 4th chapter, verse 6. And this is going to be one of a couple of passages we're going to use throughout the sermon that are, while not specifically addressing the marital relationship, because they have a general principle, and those who are not married can take that general principle and make it applicable. These principles need to be brought into our marriages. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. I think the passage is telling us to care about being understood. It needs to be the desire of each woman to make sure that her husband understands what she's saying. And each man needs to understand what he is saying to her and be effective as possible with that, so that we care about the listener. We speak to them in ways that will make it comfortable, easy for them to listen and take in what we're saying. Whether they end up agreeing or disagreeing, and this is across the sexes here, both men and women, whether they're going to agree or not agree, at least they have listened to what's going to be said, and we're going to talk about that in greater detail in just a few minutes. And the grace here, I think, is a reference to the idea, as klutzy, now I'm going to pick on men for a second, as klutzy as we as men sometimes are in communicating, I think this passage helps us to understand, as a Christian, in all types of communication, we need to have a finesse and a beauty that is actually going to present itself as a soft and lovely thing to have within our lives. And so we want to enrich and not destroy. Enrich and not destroy the husband-wife relationship. So the question is, where are you in relation to the things that are talked about in this particular passage? I'd like for us to take a moment. There are a number of books out in the world about communication. The Art of Communication is a popular one, and many others. But some of the tips that they give about the sense of communication, and especially as we talk in a husband and wife relationship. Some of the things that are involved in this idea of communication come into play when we think about the fact that it should always be our desire to tell the truth and be transparent. And let me say that the five things we're going to look at for the next few minutes, these are not going to be, "You're kidding, I didn't know that." These are things that in your heart of heart you're aware of, but I think sometimes we've glossed over. When we talk about the idea of telling the truth, the idea of wanting to make sure that we are indeed going to be individuals that do speak as we should in all things and disguise nothing, that we should be open in our relationship, that we should make sure there's a mutual trust that what our spouse is going to say to us is the truth. That we don't have to look for some hidden little meaning there. We don't have to wonder, well, he says that or she says that, but is it kind of opaque? And in other words, you can't see through it. You can't see to what's really going on in their mind. Though they're saying this, something else really may be going in their mind. That's not transparency. When we're speaking and talking to our spouse in truth, when we're being transparent, the things we say are the things we mean to be saying. The truth we're giving should be evident. It doesn't have to be searched for through a bunch of stuff as we talk to one another. Good relationships are based upon the idea of mutual trust. It can't exist. That is that trust. It just cannot exist without that kind of truth and transparency. Paul tells the Ephesians in the 4th chapter, verses 15 and then down to verse 25, but speaking the truth in love, may grow up in all things and to Him who is the head, Christ. And in 25, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. This is the point that I'm talking about when I make the point we need to understand that lying corrodes trust. It just does. Lying is going to corrode the trust in any form that we might think we're wanting to establish a firm foundation in our marriage. If we introduce lying, then it's going to corrode it, and it's going to take time to take that corrosion out, to re-establish the foundation and to build again. We need to be careful that we're not falsifying things that go on within our lives. There shouldn't be something that's a surprise to the husband or the wife about each other as the years go on. We as men are not doing our wives any favor by thinking, well, I need to protect her and not tell her what our finances are really like. Wives cannot go about doing things financially without sharing with and telling her husband, here's what I'm doing with our finances. That's just a simple example, but it is certainly an example that's relevant to the idea of having that truthfulness, that transparency within our lives. We should not ask any questions, and I've said this before and I want to make the point again, never ask a question that you don't want the truth to. And I suspect during the course of our lives, we've all been guilty of that. We've asked someone, and it might not just be within a marriage, we've asked somebody a question and we're hoping we really want them to say this, but in fact they're going to tell us something else and wow, it's going to hurt. We're not going to like it. Bring it over to the marriage. Only ask a question if you want to know the answer. And if your spouse asks you a question, and I'm not talking about the silliness of, does this dress make me look fat? Or does this pair of pants make me look fat? I'm not talking about that kind of silliness. I'm talking about in serious marital issues. I'm going to stand behind the pulpit. I don't like that many laughs that came out about my pants. In serious marital questions, if you ask a question, expect the truth, even if it isn't what you'd hoped it would be. Even if it is something that hurts. There can be answers that weren't what I expected it to be, but it doesn't hurt me. There can be other questions I ask that the answer hurts. But it is that honesty that allows us to say, okay, that hurt, but now let's go from here, and I know the truth of it, let's build on that. So don't go hedging any answers to questions that are asked. Make sure that you don't speak a lie by not speaking at all. And that can happen as well. A conversation can be going along in an affirmative by one of the spouses, and the other, though there were questions in it, the conversation just goes on the part of one. The other person sits quiet as if affirming the positive of everything that's being said, when in fact, if it's negative, the other spouse needs to know the negative, but we sit in silence. That's not appropriate. That's not beneficial communication for anyone. Remember, the proverb writer tells us that God hates a lying tongue. And we need to remember that. God's going to hate it if we lie to our spouse. It's not our job to decide our spouse can only handle this much truth, so I'm going to only give this much truth, but not the totality of what that truth is, and in doing so, end up basically lying while telling the truth. How did they do that? Because they deceive in the way they answered and gave part of the truth, but it didn't give the whole story, because if they gave the whole story, there would be other truths there that would change what was going on in the spouse's mind. So we need to always take the attitude, I want to be honest with my spouse, and I want him or her to know, I'm going to give you the truth, but I'll give it to you in love. In other words, it's not a case, hey, you ask me, here it is, in such a way that it's crushing. There can be times that I'm asked something, and the tone I use is important in how I communicate back to my spouse that truth in a way that helps her or him to deal with it, understand it, absorb it, and not damage the relationship. I think another thing is necessary, and that is that we have to be careful and not find ourselves wrapped up in a blame game. When we begin to attach blame to something, then what we're attempting to do is remove our own personal responsibility. In many discussions where problems are being brought out, it's probably given that there's issues with both. We have to own our part of the problem, and our spouse has to own their part of the problem. What we want to be very careful about, however, is simply saying, the blame is over here. When in fact, the blame may be with both of us. Now, that is not putting your head in the sand to where there is blame on him or her. And that needs to be dealt with honestly, our trust point earlier, that needs to be dealt with as well. I think one of the good things that we need to do with our spouse, whether it's mental or in conversation, it's probably usually mentally, just ask yourself, am I quick to blame my spouse when a problem arises? When my problems are exposed, am I blaming my spouse? Do I tend to want to avoid my responsibility in whatever the situation might be? Am I one who is willing to accept the blame and recognize the weaknesses that I have and need to work on within my marriage? Do I feel that, and this, gentlemen, I think can be a problem for us, though it can be a problem for the women as well, do I feel that if I admit to the things that I'm being blamed for and being actually guilty of, does that project a weakness in my character that I don't want to accept? Now, there are times when it does expose a weakness that if I'll accept, I can strengthen that weakness. There are other times when I take that attitude, all I do is let that weakness continue on. So be careful about getting into a blame game when we're communicating with our spouse. I hope you appreciate the first word here. Always avoid overstatements. Putting the word always in there makes that statement lopsided. It's really just the idea of avoid overstatements. When you're communicating with your spouse, really make it an effort to stay away from the word every time, always, whenever. Because there's probably never been an always, every time, and whenever. Even if it's a majority of the time, that may be true. But don't use those types of overstatements. If we use that kind of overstatement, what we end up doing is diminishing the validity of a statement that needs to be discussed, that needs to be talked about. I've just got a few things here. Have you ever heard things like, you always fly off the handle when we discuss things? You always spend too much when you go to the store. You always go into a shell when we have differences that need to be talked about. You overcook the toast every time. Don't bring that kind of conversation into your conversation. I think overstatements are a way indeed of putting our spouse down and killing within them some feelings that they may and should have toward us. So just remember, always negative statements most of the time do damage to our relationship. So be careful of that when we're engaged in communication. You probably can't tell. I should have gone with larger fonts, but the font with the L is actually smaller than the font with the exclamation point. In fact, they went up two font numbers each time, and I maybe should have made them greater because I wanted it to start with a small L and go up to a large exclamation point. Most of us are poor listeners. One of the reasons, I think, is because the world is just saturated with verbiage. Just a lot of talk going on. I think sometimes that makes us feel that silence is a good thing. And there are times when silence is a good thing. There are times when we need to be silent because we're listening. But here's what may happen many times. We're silent, not because we're listening, we're silent because we're formulating in our heads the words we're going to say back when they're done talking. And in the process, I will guarantee you from personal experience, you will miss some of the words they're saying to you so that you won't fully understand the statement or question they're giving you. And again, I tell you that from personal experience. Because I have often listened, heard verbiage while I'm thinking about how to answer my wife. And I've certainly done it when trying to deal with other people in the course of my life. That's one of my few weaknesses on this particular subject. We need to be sure that we don't let that detract and distract us in our communication in our marriage. We need to make sure that our spouse can't be thinking, you know, he never hears me. She never really hears me. She hears the words coming out of my mouth, but she doesn't connect it with what I'm saying. He hears the words coming out of my mouth, but he doesn't connect it with what I'm saying. James said in the first chapter, verse 19, "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." How many times do you turn that around? In marriage especially. Let everyone be quick to speak, quick to wrath. And if you get around to it, you may hear it. I think a lot of marriages have difficulty communicating because they've taken James 1, verse 19, and they basically have turned it on its head. The proverb writer said in 18 and verse 13, "He who answers a matter before he hears, it is folly and shame to him." That goes back to what I was saying a few minutes ago. That's the Bible passage for what I was saying a few minutes ago. Be listening to what they're telling you. Understand what they're telling you. And I'll tell you what, an old adage is quite apropos, and that is, and don't get upset if your spouse starts playing this on you, using this against you, or using it to help you. What did I just say to you? I don't know. You were standing in front of the TV. I don't know. I was thinking about what I was doing later. I don't know. We'll never be honest enough to say that to the spouse. But just when you've said something of value to your spouse, there may be times when it's appropriate to say, tell me what I just told you. And not just the words, because they may say the words right back to you, but they didn't comprehend, they didn't apply it to the conversation, they didn't really know how it was being used in the context. Because that, tell me what I just said, can be followed up with, what did it mean? What did I say to you mean? Now, when they can tell you what you said and tell you what it meant, then you've got some good communication going on. And I'm even going to write this as Joe Shane's opinion. Not like, I don't want to speak in the third person. If they just get the second part of it, what did I mean by what I said? And they nail it, that's good. They're listening. They're listening. But don't be afraid to ask your spouse, what did I just say to you? And I want to close by saying, listen, always tell your spouse, I love you. Every day. I know we can get busy. And we just called for a quick second to get a quick answer, and I got to get back to something, especially if you're at work. And it has nothing to do with people around you hearing you tell your wife you love them or telling your husband you love them. But even in those quick moments, how long does it take in you've had this 30-second conversation and you could say, okay, goodbye, hanging up. Or, okay, I love you, and you hang it up. Did that take much longer? No. It is sad that I have known of individuals who have told me that there have been times when it has gone on and on and on. They can't remember the last time their spouse said, I love you. In wedding ceremonies, I've always asked the couple that are getting married, while it's easy right now, later as life takes over, still make sure that during the course of the day, you tell them that you love them. We understand that there's power in the words that we use. We understand that and we need to appreciate it. And we need to recognize the power of the words that you have when you're speaking to your spouse. Do not diminish it. Don't think it's not there. Even if he or she dismisses you a lot, there's still power in your words, and we need to take that very seriously. Those are the things I wanted to share with you with regard to communication. How is your communication level between you and your spouse? Ideally, you and your spouse can have conversation or would or should have conversation about this maybe today, maybe this evening. Sometime during the week, reflect upon the parts of the conversation of the sermon that stuck in your head to say, what did you think about what Joe said about this or that or the other thing? And I say in all honesty and sincerely, if your spouse isn't here today, ask that they go online and listen. Perhaps best of all, with you present, listen to the lesson and have conversation about it. I think it enriches the marriage. And I think it's something that all of us need to see as a valuable part of our relationship. Even though, as a last comment, statistically, women want to talk a whole lot more. This isn't some funny little put down. Women want to talk a whole lot more than men do. There have been statistics out there that women are most comfortable if they can have about 25,000 words with their husband during the course of the day. And men, statistically, at least in the survey, a couple of surveys I've seen, men want to have somewhere around 10,000 words with their spouse. Maybe we're wired different, whatever it is. But gentlemen, don't cut off the conversation your wife needs to have with you. That's my final thought on that. We're going to sing a song of encouragement in case there's some in the audience that having maybe not thought about this, but just being in the spiritual environment of studying the Word, you know what you need to be doing to serve the Lord, and perhaps you've not yet come to Christ. This is the time to do so. Perhaps you have been walking in the light and left the light. Return to Him this day by repentance. And if it's something that you would want to share with us, then let us pray with you about it. But if you have a need to respond to the invitation, we invite you to have a seat here in the front as we stand together and as we sing.